Popular films, TV series, and novels can profoundly shape a nation's collective memory and cement the evolving historical master narrative. In her new book, Velvet Retro, Post-Socialist Nostalgia and the Politics of Heroism in Czech Popular Culture, historian Veronika Pehe examines the evolving ways the communist era has been portrayed since 1989, from early comedies to tragic narratives that cast the past as trauma. Scholars of state socialism have frequently invoked post-communist nostalgia to identify an uncritical longing for the utopian ambitions and lived experience of the former Eastern Bloc. Veronika Pehe offers an alternative take on the phenomenon, instead presenting retro as a dominant mode of remembering that combines an aesthetic fascination with the past with political condemnation of the state socialist era. In Velvet Retro, she argues that the term nostalgia fails to describe memory cultures in the Czech Republic, identifying a distinctly retro aesthetic in film, TV, literature, and other cultural forms. There's a lot to unpack here. I began by asking the author to explain her concept of retro.
Nostalgia is a longing for the past, or for an aspect of the past. I think it's quite inaccurate to think of nostalgia as wanting a kind of wholesale return to a past period, even though obviously there are types of nostalgia like that. Svetlana Boym, who wrote a very influential book about the topic of nostalgia, distinguishes between restorative and reflective nostalgia. So restorative would be more of this idea of actually wanting to recreate a lost past, the idea that this past is somehow superior to the present we're experiencing and wanting to reclaim that. While reflective nostalgia is much more slippery and ironic and playful, and it's more about just picking aspects of the past that whoever is performing this nostalgia might have some kind of emotional attachment to, trying to playfully kind of pick and mix different aspects of the past, whether through various kind of artistic projects or just material objects, using consumer products from past periods, and so on. So these are kind of two different strands of nostalgia that have been written about quite a lot, not just in relation to the former Eastern Bloc, but also in Western culture. And then there's retro, and I distinguish between nostalgia and retro. And in the book, I say that retro is actually much less about this kind of sentimental attachment to the past that we associate with nostalgia. And retro is much more kind of distance, and it's more about using aspects of the past for some kind of aesthetic pleasure, for instance, in various retro fashions, which are worn today, but without necessarily engaging emotionally or sentimentally with that past, or perhaps not even condoning that past in any way, perhaps even criticizing it. So there are definitely aspects of retro that can be quite kind of ambiguous in this sense.
Early on in Velvet Retro, Veronika Pehe contrasts the forms of nostalgia expressed through the cultural canons of the Czech Republic, especially with that of Germany, where post-socialist Ostalgie is characterized in part by the longing for promise of a more humane and just society, that is, searching for redeeming features of life in the former GDR, and also that of Yugoslavia, where a restorative nostalgia is also quite pervasive.
And I think the main difference between the Czech case and the German and also Yugoslav cases is that the latter two do turn to this kind of utopian impulse behind the socialist project. So this idea that state socialism was meant to build a better, a more just society. And the object of nostalgia, this kind of longing, does turn to this idea in some way, even if it's then perhaps problematized or kind of shown as unachievable. Now, in the Czech case, this is really missing, I think. And I think this is very interesting that even though there's this whole canon of films and TV series which, on a first viewing, would seem to invoke nostalgia or a kind of sentiment for the past. Certainly, they offer a kind of benign, lenient view of life under state socialism. I'm talking about films like Pelíšky by Jan Hřebejk or Rebelové by Filip Renč and so on. In fact, when you start to analyze the kind of political meanings conveyed in these films, they're actually quite anti-communist in the sense that they might kind of indulge a fascination with the material culture of past, the fashions, the hairstyles. All of that is there for the viewer's enjoyment, but at the same time, it's clear that the audience is not meant to sympathize with the political system that produced those aesthetic objects. So there's this kind of tension between, on the one hand, the political condemnation of the previous regime, which is present in all of these representations, and at the same time, this kind of enjoyment of the form and the style of that period. And I think that is different to the German or the Yugoslav context, that there isn't much of this sentiment relating to building the idea of building a better society.
In the Czech Republic, popular films produced in the first 15 years or so after the communist regime collapsed, Pehe says, were dominated by comedies that were quite benign in their depiction of the previous regime. They also tended to focus on ordinary people and their minor acts of resistance and reveled in the retro aesthetics of the period, the music, hairstyles, and so on.
Later on, something starts to change, and suddenly kind of more dramatic movies are being produced that portray life under communism as trauma. They try to paint kind of large narratives of heroic resistance, which is something that really wasn't present in these comedies before. The comedies that were produced in the 1990s and in the first decade of the new millennium, they focused largely on stories of, so to say, ordinary people. And these ordinary people perform minor acts of resistance. So going back to what we were speaking about previously, all of these films have this kind of already inscribed anti-communist attitude in them, in the sense that even though the viewers are invited to appreciate all these objects and styles from the past, in fact, they're asked to sympathize with characters who quite clearly define themselves as in opposition to the regime. So the protagonists will engage in kind of in actions that in some way demonstrate their resistance to communist rule. But quite often that's also a source of humor, and it's what makes these films comedies. To give an example, perhaps Pelíšky is one of the best-known films of this genre, where one of the characters, who's this kind of very staunchly anti-communist World War II resistance veteran who really hates the communists, he walks out onto his balcony at one point and shouts this kind of obscenity that all the proletarians of the world should go, and, you know, I won't say what exactly he says, but that's an example of this kind of very minor action where somebody is just publicly voicing their opposition to the regime, but also knowing that it's actually something quite safe to do, that it won't have any repercussions for them. It's more of a kind of performance of moral exculpation, and this happens in these movies all the time. So my argument in the book is that these films offer this kind of picture of collectively living through an authoritarian dictatorship in a dignified way, right? They try to suggest that ordinary people perform these acts of minor resistance on a daily basis and did not agree with the regime. So this is a kind of very flattering picture of the collective memory of the past that's being produced in this cultural production, right? Because it doesn't really deal with issues of collaboration or perhaps simply also acquiescence with the regime or outright support. Characters who support the communists or who are portrayed as members of the Communist Party are always negative. So it's kind of a very binary way of portraying the past, because the positive characters are always the ones who oppose the communist regime, and the negative characters are the communists. So this is the kind of nostalgia for resistance that's present in a lot of these films and TV series, where it's precisely the fact that there was this authoritarian regime against which characters define themselves that provided this kind of sense of excitement of always doing something that's perhaps not quite allowed. And that kind of motivates the actions of many characters. I think a great example of this is The Identity Card, a film by Andrei Troyan from 2010. It's based on a novel by Petr Šabach, who wrote a lot of these kind of nostalgic stories about his childhood and adolescence in state socialism. And in The Identity Card, this film tells the story of a group of teenagers who are constantly getting in trouble with the police. And they really enjoy that. They really enjoy the sense of rebellion, that kind of expressing their opposition to communist authority grants them. So what I look at in the book is how nostalgia actually doesn't have to be a desire to recover the communist past, a desire for its return, not at all. In fact, this nostalgia expressed in many Czech cultural artifacts is exactly for the opposite, for kind of trying to overthrow the communist regime. It's a kind of anti-communist nostalgia, so to say.
By asking what constituted acts of heroism under dictatorship, who should be celebrated and who condemned, cultural producers helped shape the collective memory, but also revealed shared assumptions about the values associated with the present political order. Veronica Pehe says a dramatic turn away from comedies came in 2005 or so, along with a shift in public discourse at the institutional level. A tangible result, for instance, was the establishment of the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, which seeks to produce a kind of official memory politics and whose mission is to celebrate anti-communist resistance.
And because the setting up of the Institute produced a really heated public debate, representations, cultural production also starts to kind of change in this kind of changing memory landscape. And we see that a lot of writers and also filmmakers are suddenly kind of shifting away from these small stories of ordinary people who perform these gestures of petty heroism, and instead are starting to focus on characters who really try to commit acts of genuine heroism. So often these films or stories will also be based on true stories, and I think a great example here is Boris Ikesh, so the HBO miniseries directed by Agnieszka Holland from 2013, which deals with the self-immolation of Jan Palach and then the ensuing courtroom drama that film captures. And the main protagonist is the lawyer Dagmar Bureshova, who is, of course, a real life character. And she's portrayed really as a hero, as somebody who was incredibly courageous and stood up to the authorities at the time. So a lot of this production kind of later on really is kind of searching for heroes, as I call it, searching for role models, trying to break away from this idea that everybody resisted in some small way. No, they didn't, these new films and books are saying. A lot of people were cowardly, but then some people were exceptionally courageous, and they are the heroes. Obviously, what this kind of model does is that it paints a picture of the past that is incredibly black and white, and it leaves very little space for all that's in between these heroes and those who didn't have the courage. It doesn't offer a lot of scope to explore those spaces.
Mm-hmm. You did note that if there is a nostalgia, a restorative nostalgia, a longing for the past, then it would be the First Republic, which in the collective memory is posited as the true site of Czech democratic values, and that communist rule is seen as an aberration, a Soviet import. Is there an example of a TV series or a film that comes to mind that illustrates that? I mean, there was one I know called simply First Republic. I think it was quite popular.
That's right, yes. In fact, I think this would also answer your question as to how Czech nostalgia differs from the German case or other cases, is that if we understand nostalgia as returning to something that's been lost, then the lost object in the Czech case isn't really the period of state socialism, but it's the First Republic, which in the Czech mythology is understood as the kind of origin of democracy. This is very much a kind of myth that is implicit in many of these representations that I discuss. I think the best example is probably Vyprávěj, which is a TV series that's set from the 1960s onwards, but it's actually produced by the same team who then produced the TV series První republika, First Republic. So they definitely seem to have a fascination with this particular period. But I think Vyprávěj really illustrates this point very clearly, in the sense that there's a character of the grandmother, the kind of matriarch of the family that the series follows, who has a statue of Masaryk in her apartment, and she's kind of constantly invoking the values of the interwar First Republic. And so I think this is really something that hidden, let's say, between the lines of a lot of these representations of socialism, that in fact there's this kind of narrative of progress. This idea that all the characters are performing these acts of resistance to eventually overthrow the regime and reinstate the kind of true Czech democracy, so to say. That's the kind of central myth that's being portrayed. And this is also what I think allows us to place these many of these representations within the framework of retro rather than nostalgia, because what I argue is that retro has a different temporal dynamic to nostalgia. Nostalgia is all about a return to the past, but retro, in fact, has this idea of a linear sense of progress inscribed into it. This idea that the present, where we find ourselves, is in fact superior to the past that we're returning to. So this is kind of where all of these acts of resistance are eventually taking us, to the present. And of course, it's in a way quite a kind of simple vision of history that many of these films and TV series offer in commercial cinema or works of popular literature.
Right. Lastly, if there's anything that I haven't asked you about that you in particular would like an international audience to understand about your book.
Well, I think the book offers a whole history of post-socialism in the Czech Republic through the prism of popular culture and how the past has been remembered. And I think this is something that perhaps has been done to a certain extent, but this book is the first to gather it all in one place and to really look at the first 25 years after 1989 and how the cultural memory of life under state socialism developed. So in that sense, I guess it's perhaps a useful overview. And it definitely shows some of the specificities of the Czech case and the Czech memory of state socialism, which is this aspect of nostalgia for resistance in particular and petty heroism, and this idea that heroism is taken on by ordinary characters who are shown to oppose the regime. And in that sense, it offers a kind of very flattering memory of the past. But it's not just a book that comments on the Czech situation per se. And I think something that we perhaps didn't mention is that retro, the way I define it, is also present in a lot of Western cultures. It's not something that's dependent on the post-socialist context. So I talk about Velvet Retro as something specific to the Czech Republic, but that definitely has wider application across popular culture.